Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation. America's sports voice. KMOX.
Welcome back. A post-game edition of the St. Louis Munganest Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line continues. Blues just another gut-wrenching loss to the Senators, the worst team in the National Hockey League. But we're going to still talk a little big picture Blues with Scott Burnside of The Athletic. You can read him at theathletic.com. Follow him on Twitter at OvertimeScottB. Heard a little bit of Scott in our Blues pregame coverage, but that was just a sliver of our entire conversation as we talked Blues. We talked bye weeks and the schedule, catching up to teams right now, the postseason picture, and more. Scott, how are you, man? Happy almost postseason.
It is. I keep looking at the standings and the schedule, and I'm sort of shocked, although I shouldn't be, that just how close we are, you know, with a lot of teams in that 69, 70, 71 game category. All of a sudden you're looking, you know, by the end of this weekend, really, teams will be inside 10 games to play in this regular season. It seems like it's gone by just in a blur.
Well, it's been pretty incredible over the last month and a half as well. And coming out of the All-Star break and the bye weeks, I know fans absolutely must love the volume of hockey. For teams like the Blues, it's been crazy. They played like, 15 games in 21 days over a stretch in February. They didn't have two home games in a row, six out of seven again on the road here. The bye week is great, I'm sure, for players, but are we starting to see this catch up, or are teams start to pay the price a little bit for that week off?
Yeah, there is certainly a wide variance in the view on the overall value of the bye week, and I think, you know, it depends on, you know, the player in individually, but I know that a lot of GMs don't like the idea of the bye week. It does compress the schedule in a way that you wonder if there's, you know, certainly there's a benefit for having a week away from the game in the middle of the season and being able to recharge your batteries. But you have to wonder if there was a way to, you know, maybe have a schedule where you have shorter breaks, especially down the stretch heading into the playoffs, days where you're without a game for maybe three or four or something like that, as opposed to playing three and four nights or having those longer road trips at the critical juncture of the season. Players might like that a little bit better. But it certainly does change things when you throw the bye week in there. And now with the, what are we talking about, 4 weeks left in the regular season, it's time now where the rubber hits the road for a lot of teams. And, you know, the Blues have put themselves in a nice spot, and your schedule is pretty favorable down the road with 13 games left to go. But it's not an easy run for anyone at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I wonder, Scott, if you could do kind of what you alluded to, maybe like 3 days or 4 days on either side of the All-Star weekend so that guys could still get that extended time off and get away and go somewhere with the family. But then just me selfishly watching the games, if you had another 3 days like right here, like a month later, that would also give teams a chance to reset and get some guys healthy, because that could be the biggest challenge right now. And for, you know, the caliber of play and how important every game is right now, just I would love if teams had an extra couple of days to maybe get guys back in and make sure that they were at full strength for the stretch run.
Yeah, there's no question, especially with the parity in the NHL now. And I'm glad we're not like the NFL. I'm glad we're not in a situation where teams are resting guys per se, and so much at stake in terms of home ice, obviously securing a playoff berth to begin with. You don't see a lot of that, but it does make you wonder that come playoff time, you know, how much has been expended going into the playoffs and how much is left. And it's funny, I was talking to a coach the other day, and we were just talking about coaching in the playoffs, and he said, if your team can't change its level of play by 10 to 20% come playoff time, you have no hope of winning. And we were talking about Tampa, and he hypothesized that if they don't play better than they are now, then they won't win the Stanley Cup, regardless of how good a team they are now, because that's what playoff competition is all about. And it makes it a lot more difficult if you go into the playoffs already beat up. We already know it's a war of attrition once you get in the postseason, but certainly lots of teams are not leaving much on the bench just getting to the playoffs. So it's a challenge to get there, and then the challenge is to drive it up a notch or two starting on the 10th of April.
Yeah, last thing on this, then we'll get to actually some games, but it's become just something that happens in the NBA, not just down the stretch, but over the course of a season, that guys will get maintenance days. And whether it's players like LeBron James, who play incredible volume and high minutes, or if it's teams like the Spurs, who are one of the first kind of forward-thinking teams to use that to their advantage, they will strategically map it out before the season. We don't see that in the NHL, and I'm not saying that one way is right or wrong. If you're a fan and you pay to see the Lakers and LeBron's not playing, you're probably a little upset, but I wonder if that's something that teams will be a little more proactive about moving forward, especially if, you know, guys are, I guess, not as much playing internationally with no Olympics, but just the load or the playoff run the year before, if that's something teams will consider.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. You're right. During Olympic years, when the NHL was going to the Olympics, and hopefully they will be going back in 2022 in Beijing, but that has been an issue during the stretch run after an Olympic break. For those players who did take part in the tournament, it is an issue. And I'm not saying that there aren't coaches who will give a veteran player a night off, or certainly, you know, Jordan Binnington's a good example. How do you rest or marshal your goaltending troops down the stretch so that your number one goaltender is healthy? I've wondered that. I was surprised a little bit that Vegas didn't beef up its goaltending at the trade deadline, given how much they rely on Marc-Andre Fleury. And really, with all due respect to Malcolm Subban, it really just, you know, he's not a guy who's provided a lot of plan B for them. So, and you do have to, you know, you do have to, if you're John Cooper, the head coach in Tampa, how do you deal with a team that has no competition right now, right? I think there's 16 or 17 points ahead of the next closest team in the Eastern Conference, and a huge bulge over Calgary or San Jose for top spot in the NHL for the President's Trophy. So, you know, John Cooper has to make sure that his players are sharp, but he also doesn't want them worn down needlessly. And I think that's always been the issue for coaches, because you don't want your team to sort of glide into the playoffs. And we've seen it in the past. I mean, so few President's Trophy winning teams actually go on to win the Stanley Cup. And part of it is that sometimes the teams who have the great success in the playoffs are teams that are already, you know, have sort of ramped themselves up that 10 or 15% just to get into the playoffs or just to get home ice advantage. And for those elite teams that have no adversity and haven't been challenged, that's been a challenge for them. We saw that with Washington, you know, won back-to-back President's Trophies in 16 and 17 and couldn't get beyond Pittsburgh in the second round. Both those years happened to them also in 2010. Losing in the first round of Montreal. So you do have that issue, and I'm sure that's something that John Cooper in Tampa is aware of.
Scott Burnside is with us. You can read Scott at theathletic.com. Also, the great podcast with Pierre, and follow on Twitter at Overtime Scott B. You mentioned Jordan Binnington. Let's talk a little bit about Binnington and what he's done, because after just a heartbreaking loss on January 5th, it was a Saturday night, the Blues had just beat the Capitals. Jake Allen gave up a couple of goals in 30 seconds in the third period against the Islanders, and the Blues woke up on Sunday staring down a trip to the East Coast. They had the fewest points in the West, second fewest in the NHL. 2 days later, the first game of that trip was Binnington's first start. It was in Philadelphia against the Flyers. He put together just an insane run, the 11-game win streak. He's cooled off a bit now, but with what he's done over the last couple of months, with how he dragged the Blues back into this race, how do you, Scott, put into perspective what he did for this team and how it's affected not just the Blues, but the rest of the West?
Yeah, there's no question. He is, you know, we often overvalue, I think, the role of coaches and goaltenders. Sometimes they get too much credit when the team wins and too much blame when they lose. But there's no question that Binnington is a player, and frankly, as a guy who votes in the annual awards, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he factors into the Hart Trophy. I assume the Blues are going to be a playoff team. In fact, given their schedule, I'll be surprised. Not surprised, but they certainly have an excellent chance to overtake Nashville for second place in the Central Division and secure home ice advantage, which is, as you point out, is something that 8 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago would have seemed a completely fanciful notion. So it is going to be interesting to see how Binnington fares in terms of the awards discussion as we get down towards the end of the regular season. But to me, it's you know, it goes back to the heart of the relationship between a goaltender and the rest of the team. And with all due respect to Jake Allen, I think it's fair to say that over the last 2 or 3 years, there have been times when the team has not had the greatest confidence in Allen to deliver quality starts at critical moments in the season. Now, you know, we haven't got to the absolute critical part of this season for the Blues, right? I mean, it's one thing to crawl out of the hole they were in and make the playoffs, which should be a given now. Now the question is, can Binnington deliver those kinds of starts when it matters in a first-round series against Nashville? And I think that's going to be one of the great storylines going into the postseason, is whether Binnington can keep that up. But certainly there's no question that he is a very self-possessed young man. It's clear his team has a terrific confidence when they take the ice, and they know that he's behind them. And it makes such a difference. If you don't have that kind of confidence, if you play worrying that every shot is going to go in, or wondering if that goaltender is going to make that critical save, it's hard to play wide open creative offense if you're worried about getting back, if you're worried about not getting caught too deep if you're a defenseman. Some of those things are critical to generating offense. And if you don't have that confidence in your goaltending, I think it blunts your creativity and it makes it hard to generate the kind of offense that you need to win consistently. And Binnington has given them that kind of confidence, and I think you've seen that reflected in the Blues, both in terms of the goals that they scored and how much better they are as a team defensively.
I think the awards voting is so interesting. And in any sport, it seems to me so often, and we fly close to the sun with baseball awards here in the National League Central over the last few years, but I guess with hockey too, Scott, it seems like so often, whether it's, you know, coach of the year, maybe most notably, but also most valuable player, unless there's a runaway or, you know, a guy's having a year like Tampa and Kucherov's having, so often we seem to judge it against preseason expectations. And the team that maybe overachieves most, we assume that coach has done the best job. And sometimes they might, but sometimes a team that had high expectations might deal with a lot and then still come out with a pretty good year. And I wonder about Craig Berube with what he's done. I wonder about Ryan O'Reilly. He's one of only two players on the Blues with a double-digit plus-minus positively. The other one's Colton Parayko, who have played regularly. And, you know, even before Binnington, if Ryan O'Reilly isn't on this team, then they're probably talking about where they're going to pick at the top of the lottery.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, there's no question that Ryan O'Reilly is going to get some love in terms of the Selke. I can feel pretty confident in saying that. It's a very interesting Selke field this year with, you know, Patrice Bergeron is, you know, he's back healthy, but he was injured early on, sort of the perennial favorite there, and the Bruins are a very good team. But with the Kings in decline and the Blackhawks in decline, so you don't have Jonathan Toews, you don't have Anze Kopitar in the mix in the way that you used to. I know I've talked to a lot of people who figure that there are players like Nicholas Backstrom and certainly Sidney Crosby, especially given the way that Crosby has played, not just for the Hart Trophy, which I think is a given for him and where he is in the scoring race, but also his 200-foot game is so critical to, you know, a Penguins team that has, you know, like Evgeny Malkin has not been great this year. They've had lots of injuries up front. Their defense has been hampered by injury as well, and up and down goaltending from Matt Murray. But Sidney Crosby has really been sort of the guiding force in terms of the defensive responsibility. So I think his name will factor into their Selke discussion in a way that maybe it hasn't in the past. So it's going to be fascinating there. But I do think that Ryan O'Reilly is. I think there is an understanding around the hockey world of how important he's been to this Blues team on a host of fronts, leadership, the 200-foot game, critical point production, all of those things, and especially with the team now surging back into the playoff discussion, I think people will be taking note of that. And you mentioned Craig Berube. I think historically, the broadcasters who vote on the Jack Adams, for some reason, it's a hard award to win if you're the coach of a good team like John Cooper.
Yeah.
I doubt if he'll win it this year, but he should be a finalist, I would think. But if you take over as an interim coach, sometimes you don't get the recognition that maybe you should. I think of Mike Sullivan, who took over in Pittsburgh, went on to win the Stanley Cup, and has had to win back-to-back cups, of course, and wasn't a finalist for the Jack Adams either year. So it'll be an interesting time to see who the finalists are when the dust clears in once we get through the regular season.
Yeah, and finally, Scott, what do you make of Berube? And certainly none of us can get into the head of Doug Armstrong or his management team, but I think the assumption, almost like when the Cardinals last year parted ways with Mike Matheny and ended up giving their full-time job to a guy from within the organization who took over on an interim basis, Mike Shildt, I think the assumption for fans or the tantalizing names that were out there led to a lot of discussion a few months ago, but I think he's got a shot to remain the head coach in St. Louis this year and beyond.
Oh, very much so. And in fact, we had Doug Armstrong on our podcast several weeks ago, and it might have been just before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And we talked about how Craig Berube was basically narrowing the field of potential coaches for next year with every win that the Blues had. And I think it sends, I think you have to be careful of the message that you send. If the Blues continue on and they make the playoffs, even if they lose in the first round, but they're competitive, they have a strong showing, whether it's Nashville or Winnipeg or whoever they end up playing in the first round, I think as long as they play competitively, you have to wonder about the message it sends. If it's not Craig Berube that comes back after helping this team climb out of such a deep hole. So I'd be a bit surprised if it's not Craig Berube, but I also understand that ownership has a say in these kinds of things, and you do have, there's no question that Joel Quenneville's name has been out there since he was released by the Chicago Blackhawks early in the season, and with the change of coach with Mike Yeo going and Craig Berube coming in as the interim, I think it's been fair to, draw that line from A to B, given Joel's connection to this franchise and this city. But I will be surprised if the Blues don't, if they don't collapse and they don't miss the playoffs. I'll be surprised if Craig Berube doesn't get a chance to continue the work that he started here this year with the Blues into next season.
Subscribe at theathletic.com and read Scott and everyone else, Jeremy Rutherford here in St. Louis with the Blues coverage, great Cardinals coverage, all the national coverage. Hey, what's been your favorite part about being a part of The Athletic, Scott?
Well, I think it's been the ability to really dig into topics and to really sort of challenge yourself as a journalist to find the stories that other people aren't telling, and tell them in a way that very few publications or entities are telling them these days. And it's when you work with people as talented as Jeremy Rutherford, as Katie Strang, Pierre LeBrun, it really does, you want to bring your best every day. So it's been a ton of fun since coming over there almost a year ago now that I started with The Athletic. And it's a great group of colleagues and, that I've known for years and years, and sort of work alongside them now in the same publication has been terrific. We just keep moving forward with it. So it's been a terrific honor, really, to be part of that group, and hope to keep doing it.
Yeah, and really recommend folks check out the Two Man Advantage podcast this week, because a little look inside the Central. Sarah Orleski, friend of the show, also Adam, who does a great job covering the Predators. Blues fans can dig into what we expect moving, hopefully, towards the postseason. Scott Burnside, always appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much for the time, and hopefully in the postseason, we'll be running into you here in St. Louis.
I look forward to it anytime.
A big thanks to Scott for joining us. And now we are, I guess, forced to sit back and root for the Los Angeles Kings, who are underway with the Nashville Predators out at Staples Center in L.A. The Blues in an absolute dogfight for their playoff lives. And fingers are crossed that they can get a little help and also take care of their business. They'll have a day off tomorrow in Pittsburgh, and then take on the Penguins on Saturday, the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday. So a couple of tough tests, especially facing a Pittsburgh Penguins team that you know, is always rolling. They actually blanked Buffalo 5-0 tonight. The Penguins in third place in the Metropolitan Division right now, but again, a very, very dangerous team. They've now won 3 in a row while putting up 14 goals over those 3. And they've won 4 of their last 5. Thanks to Curbs and Joey. Thanks to Scott Burnside as well. And a big thanks to Ben Boyd, our executive producer, Mike Anderson, my guy, as always, here in the KMOX studios. Tomorrow night, we got Cardinals baseball. 2 weeks from today, we'll be talking about the Cardinals in Milwaukee taking on the Brewers and hopefully getting set for a Blues playoff run. But split squad action tomorrow. Adam Wainwright, Daniel Ponce de Leon will both pitch. And the intriguing storyline continues, at least for me, the 5th spot in the rotation, and then how the bullpen shakes out for the Redbirds. So that'll be tomorrow night. I'll talk to you for TIPM. Again, Blues fall to the Senators in Ottawa tonight, 2-0. This has been a post-game edition of the St. Louis Munganast Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open line. I'm Chris Raby. Have a great rest of your night from all of us here on your home for the Cardinals and the Blues, KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!